Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us of our first webinar of 2018. This one is Landlord Life Hacks, and I'm joined by Marie Paris, who's MD and co-founder of George Ellis Property Services and a well-renowned speaker across the landlord community. So with all these webinars, they are around 25 to 30 minutes in length, and you'll be able to hear myself and Marie, but we won't be able to hear you. On the right-hand side of the panel there, there's a questions tab. So if there's any questions that you have throughout this webinar, just feel free to pop the questions in there. We will try and answer as many questions as possible, and there's also a Q&A session at the very end. With regards to the webinars, obviously we've had, as we always, again, we have hundreds of different registrations and obviously lots of people joining us. From the looks of it, it's around 70 to 75% of the registrations are landlords and a good mixture of agents as well. So with regards to copies, because we always get asked this question, at the end of this as well, within the next 48 hours, everyone who has attended will be sent a copy. And then obviously the non-attendees will also get a copy as well. So any of your colleagues that don't, and then obviously feel free to forward or share this with anybody as well. With regards to accessing this copy again in the future and all of the webinars that we've done over the last couple of years, you can access them within our resources section on the website. So it's free to join and log in. So once you log in as a landlord or if you've got an agent account with us, hit the resources section and you can access all of our other webinars, and this one will be uploaded by the end of the week as well. Okay, and final point before we kick off is obviously feedback. These webinars are all driven by our landlord and agent community, so if there's any feedback, please respond back to the marketing emails. And with any ideas or any topics or any conversations or guest speakers that you'd like us to involve with the calls, and obviously we'll build forward for the next ones and the future events. Okay. Right, so that was a brief introduction. Landlord updates is one of the key points we're going to be talking about, and really the most recent and most significant ones. So there's a number of these different changes. I'm just going to pop them up on the screen so you can see them now. Okay, they're back on the screen. So, introduction, we've gone through that. Landlord updates, the most recent ones, the most significant ones, mainly in the last couple of years, 2016, 2017, and obviously what's coming forward. There's a few tweaks that are coming from April 18 as well. We're going to cover off landlord tips, and we've got quite a lot here. And these are mainly the most common ones that we come up against, or the most common sense ones, because obviously during our calls there's lots of different types of landlords where you own a couple of properties to less than 10 or more than 100 plus, or you're a property manager that has several hundred properties that you manage as well. So we always attract a wide audience. So we're trying to cover those tips off to make sense for everybody. I'm going to finish on some statistics and some forecasts, what the current market looks like in terms of the private rented sector, some of our own statistics, and then forecasts, again, legislation and some trends and changes, and more about the way the private rented sector is going. And we might touch a little bit about what Scotland have done as well, because those guys always seem to do something different over there, and it comes over to England and Wales. And then, yeah, Q&A. So feel free, ask your questions as we go along on the right-hand panel. If you type them in there, if there's any questions that we don't answer today for whatever reason, or if we run out of time, then myself and Marie will respond back within the next 48 hours. So don't be afraid to ask those questions and type them in there. And if we don't cover them off, we will get back to you. Okay, landlord updates. So we've covered off the main ones that we believe that, obviously, one is awareness, and two is that will impact landlords. And you need to think slightly different with regards to your investments. Obviously, property is definitely a long-term investment game. It's very rare that there's short-term wins anymore. So these are some highlights or some key points that we'd like to inform everybody about or remind everybody. So the first one is mortgage interest tax relief changes. So with regards to these changes, you're looking at almost up to 20% now over from 2017 to 2020. And we covered a webinar on this, actually. I think it was middle to end of last year, whereby we partnered up with a tax specialist and talked heavily in detail with this. But if you're not aware of them now, then obviously this is something that you should definitely be aware of. And it's the way that the interest gets offset against your rental income. It'll be moving towards 20% from 2020. So every year over the last 3 years, 17, 18, 19 onwards, those increases will affect your income. So if you're not aware of that, you need to look into it. Marie, have you got anything to add on the tax relief changes? How do you find it with your clients? Are they asking questions with regards to this from the properties that you guys manage?
I think, Sim, to be honest with you, it was a very sort of bit of legislation that a lot of the investors probably didn't know, and landlords, until sort of, you know, late doors, really, until it actually showed up. But it's fundamental, because it's going to make a extreme difference to any landlord's bottom line, especially if you've got a mortgage that, you know, you'll get sort of 70% or more.
Yeah, do you know what? I think the sweet spot was, you're right, it's around 70 to 75% for the sweet spot, and obviously based on your own personal tax rate, and some people be more worse off than others, so that's something to really, really look at and to speak to your tax specialists about. The next point I've got there is the right to rent legislation, which again, you'd be very surprised the amount of landlords that we deal with across the UK that are still unaware of right to rent, which came into place now February 2016, whereby all landlords have got a duty to check, all property managers have got a duty to check that a tenant actually has the right to rent within the UK or the right to reside. So there's a number of checks that you can do, and again, we've gone into detail on these in several different webinars. I haven't heard much in the press in terms of landlords that haven't done this that have actually faced fines. I think there's a couple of high profile ones that have popped up recently in the last couple of weeks, in terms of they could be the first ones that have actually gone to court that could potentially see a fine. And again, Marie, how do you find it? Is it a general consensus that a lot of your landlords, that are they aware of the right to rent checks that they come to you, and do you see this being an issue in obviously particular parts of London, and what's your feedback on the right to rent changes?
Well, I guess when we're sort of doing the whole package for our landlords, we're keeping them compliant. But I think one of the things that landlords always have to remember, it's not just tenants, it is occupiers over the age of 18 or over. So if you have, you know, mum and dad who are going to be on the tenancy, and there are three children, and one's 23, the other's 21, and the one who's 17 is going to be 18 in the next 3 months, you need to keep an angle on it. So it's always tenants and occupiers over 18, and that is the key point. I think the other thing that I would add to that is that, you know, right to rent checks are meant to be done within 28 days of the tenancy. So if you've got somebody who's moving in on the 31st of March, there's little point in doing it now, because you won't be within that regulation, and technically then you could have a fine. Yeah?
Yeah, no, very valid points there. I think the final one to add for me there was, obviously, this whole inspections and when do agents do inspections, or how often do landlord do inspections. I think the commonality and the best practice here that we're advising landlords and agents is, you know, a lot of them do it on the 6 months or 12 monthly. As long as you do the fair due diligence, you have your processes, you have your systems in place to order to do these checks, it's very hard for you to actually counteract against mum and dad in the property, and then all of a sudden a son could move in or a family relative could move in over the age of 18 that you haven't done the checks on. They're things just to be wary of. Okay, the third one, end of wear and tear allowances. So this one again came in April 2016, and that's basically the 10% allowance is basically not, you can't claim that back now on the wear and tear for existing furnishings or new furnishings. It will only count for furniture or furnishings that you actually buy and put in the property from the purpose of a buy-to-let rental. And there's not really much else to add to that one. So bear that one in mind. And again, your accountant or your tax advisor will advise you on that one. The fourth one, which is landlord licensing. Now, this one's really snuck in, really. You know, a few landlords have labelled it as a stealth tax, for example. And we saw 4 or 5 years ago when a couple of local councils in the northwest here started implementing this, and now it's pretty much widespread now. So you have to check with your local council, if you haven't already, to see if there's a selective landlord licensing scheme. The majority of councils across the UK have a one license per property scheme, average costs are around £500. Some are lower and some is up to £1,000. And these licenses are around 5 years in terms of validity period per property. But again, just check with your local council, because there's lots of different changes. But Maria, how have you found it in the London boroughs? Is it fair to say the majority of councils have this?
We've had Croydon that have done so fairly recently, and I believe that they've made £16 million from their scheme alone, collective licensing. So it's a lot of money. You know, one thing that I will say to landlords, they do need to be able to get educated and be in communication with their local authority to see if there is a licensing scheme. Because whether you don't have a license and you should, and whether the local authority has you know, tracked you down because they know you haven't got a license, landlords have to remember that there is a rent repayment order in place. So quickly, in essence, what that simply means is your tenant can claim back 12 months of rent payments to you because you didn't have a license and you should do. So it's a really important thing. It's another cost and it needs to be factored in.
Yeah, 100%, a very strong point there. In regards to any tenant issues that you ever do get in the future as well, with and you don't have a landlord licence, that will slow down that process as well in regards to the tenant issue. So it's all about getting it right first time and making sure that you have a licence in place if you haven't already. And a future point is the fifth one, is the lettings fee ban. So lettings fee ban has been widely debated and it's been very topical for the last 18 or so months within the lettings industry, private rented sector. A lot of landlords probably still unaware of this, but this is a proposed fee ban on tenants from agents or landlords to being able to charge tenants any upfront fees apart from obviously rent and deposit. And the proposal for that is that it will not come in place before April 2019. So that's just something to be wary of. Obviously, as an agent, they're already gearing up and putting plans in place for this, and obviously landlords, it's an awareness there that you need to be aware of. I won't go into a lot of detail on that, nothing's been finalised yet, but it's something to look out for. Another point is energy efficiency regulations. From April 2018, all rental properties need to be a minimum of an E rating before obviously having rental status. So check your EPCs, get them done again, follow the notes and guidance, and obviously make sure that you enhance all your properties to have a minimum of an E rating. So I think that's an F or a G that it goes up to. The final two points were Section 21 and Deregulation Act. Some huge changes there now with regards to prescribed information, types of Section 21, and the whole Deregulation Act. So again, we've done many webinars on this. It's very admin intensive and you have to get everything right again. Working with a professional letting agent will cover everything off for you. And being a landlord, you really need to know your legislation and be on point with the Deregulation Act. It's really important, and there's big impacts and ramifications if it's not right. The final point on the landlord updates before we move on to the next section is the stamp duty land tax changes. So any landlord, I think the main reason that Hammond threw this one in was because there's a lot of landlords that have empty properties, and it's just another tax on multiple ownership of property. So for example, if we buy a property and I've got one property in my buy-to-let portfolio, I were to buy another buy-to-let property, I'd have to pay an additional tax on that. So it's 3% potentially on that tax on another stamp, and in terms of stamp duty, again, going towards the government. So there's no way around it. There's no way around it. There's a few restructuring potentials that you can do, but again, there's a tax there, and you have to be aware of it, and that's something that you need to take in consideration if you do invest in further properties. Maria, have you seen a lot of your landlords enhance their portfolios, or are they improving their existing ones to maximise their rentals?
Definitely more improving their existing ones, to be honest. I mean, I'm trying to think over the last year in terms of who has extended, and I would say that landlords are more keen to sort of make those improvements, making sure that they are up to date. If they've got to make a you know, a quick decision to sell, then the property at least is, you know, in a decent condition. So that's definitely what I'm experiencing here.
Yeah, really interesting. I think it's a mixed bag, but I do think agents and landlords are all looking more to enhancing their properties, more so to maximise the yield and obviously and the rentals overall. And it's only the very cash rich, or if the deal's too good to be true, then people are looking to enhance their portfolios. Okay, so let's go on to the next section. So a quick poll for you just to check on in terms of the audience. I'm just going to activate this poll now in terms of how many properties do you let or do you manage. So I'm just going to fire this up now. It's an interactive one, so if you can just click on your screens now. How many properties do you let? Is it 1 to 3, 4 to 9, 10 to 99, or 100 plus? So I'll just run that for 5 seconds. I think the majority of you are voting right now. Okay, that's great. Okay, I'll close it off there now. I think 82% of the audience have voted, so let's just close that off now. Share the results. Okay, so in terms of this call, 33% own between 1 and 3 properties, 29% own between 4 and 9, 20% own between 10 and 99, and then 18% of 100 plus in their portfolio. And they may be obviously agents on the higher side of, or they might be private landlords that have got larger portfolios. So a good mixture, a fair balance, really. It's interesting. I thought the 1 to 3 would be a lot higher, to be honest, with it being more landlord-centric, because I think me and Marie were discussing recently that the amount of accidental and amateur landlords are that there are in the marketplace that own between 1 and 2 properties is normally the majority. And I think if this was done in different circumstances or a different audience, then obviously that might be a lot higher, considering the agents that are on the call as well. So, okay, really interesting.
I think also, Sim, you know, there's probably a lot of landlords who are working at the moment.
Yeah.
Currently working at this present moment, so not sort of tuned into the live webinar.
Yeah.
Because I would have expected that to be a lot higher too.
Yeah, no, definitely. And obviously when this runs on reruns and recordings, you won't be able to enter those polls, but we'll put those polls on social media to see if there's any changes. But you're right. We do expect, I think the majority of rentals in the UK are owned by the accidental, so to speak, amateur landlord who still works part-time or full-time, and they own 1 to 2 properties. Okay, moving on to landlord tips. Okay, I'm just noting the time. We've got about 15 minutes to go. So these are a compilation of our best landlord tips. So we've got 12 to go through here. And we've just covered off a lot of legislation, a lot of updates, and things that you need to be aware of as being a landlord and obviously a letting agent. So the first point there is speak to a letting agent. Now, and what we mean by that is, see, there's some landlords that like to do it themselves, but it's that local knowledge, it's that legislation, it's that advice, it's that professionalism in terms of the professional body, ALA or UK ALA or whatever association that the agent may be with. It's that added knowledge that you may get from an agent instead of obviously trawling the internet or speaking to friends and family. So speak to a letting agent, potentially to help them, to help you to manage a property or to let that property out for you. Or, so obviously extra knowledge and know-how. And if they've got a lot of confidence in terms of what they're saying, then obviously give them a go at managing or letting your property out for you as well. So definitely speak to a letting agent if you haven't already. The second point is, be up to date with current legislation. Again, we've just highlighted a few things there in terms of what's happening recently and what's coming in the future. So really, really key points. Getting tax advice from a specialist. Obviously, you know, me and Marie are no tax advisors or qualified to give it. However, your tax specialist or your accountant, or even some agents have this service in-house. Really speak to them about that in terms of potentially restructuring your property portfolios to a limited company or not, running it as an individual, the wear and tear allowances, the SDLT, the mortgage interest relief. Really get that picture and build that into your yield value, because property is an investment overall and it's not a charity. The fourth point is ensure you have the most suitable mortgage product. Now, the reason why I've put this one in here is obviously the mortgage products are changing fast and rapidly all of the time. And for buy-to-let area, there seems to be a 2 to 3 and maybe 5 year interest products at the moment at very competitive rates. I definitely advise you speaking to your advisors with regards to the interest rates potentially rising twice before Brexit is the rumour. So we're looking at a potential increase this year and maybe one next year. Obviously, that's speculative at the moment, but mortgage products, you need to see if you're on the best one. Obviously, criteria change, as you can imagine. It's more stringent. However, I'd review this constantly as well. In 2 to 3 or a 5 year product, it's definitely worth looking at to review. I think the one of the biggest points is maximising your investment, and I'll bring Marie on this one. What are the most popular things, Marie, that your landlords or your clients or what you've advised that landlords have done to maximise their investments? What are the best rental yielding ones?
I think, you know, what a lot of clients are looking to do is to see if they can rent them out, their property in rooms to professionals. And we've seen, you know, a number of clients in different parts of London that have got a house, instead of renting it out as one unit, they've basically been doing so in rooms. And at this present moment, it has been going very well. But, you know, these are properties that traditionally have sort of two stories, so they're not caught at the moment in the HMO regs, but as you know, that is actually changing as of April this year. So it's going to capture in sort of two-story properties, and I think the government will capture over 160,000 properties as a result of that.
Yeah, which is frightening. Yeah, we have seen a lot of the born of this rent-a-room or spare room, whatever it may be. And you even see the programs on TV as well with regards to landlords subletting or multi-letting and just filling as many tenants in as possible. But you're right, there's things that are doing it on the right side of the law and then making sure you're compliant for future cases as well. Have you seen a lot of landlords...
Go on.
I was going to say, just to finish on that point, have you seen a lot of landlords extensively refurbishing or extending or nothing out of the ordinary can compare to painting or decorating to freshen it up?
No, we've seen a number of sort of what I would say sort of medium-sized sort of refurbishments where they've changed the kitchen, they've knocked out some walls, and you know, all done to regulations. But we have definitely seen that. So there's also, you know, a lot of people who have inherited properties through sort of, you know, unfortunately family bereavements, and the members of those families have actually taken on those properties and renting them out in that structure. You know, I think that we've got to be very honest, and the ways that you could make money in buy-to-let 10 years ago is not the same as it is now, and definitely is not going to be the same in 5 years' time. But it doesn't mean that, you know, as landlords that we can bypass regulation, because you can't. And there is a huge amount to know.
Yeah, and it's only increasing, isn't it? If I look to Scotland, I think I'm touching on Scotland in the future, but if you look to Scotland, you know, there's lots that they've done and changed there as well, and a lot of these changes could come over to England as well. So I think legislation is key, and really being in the know-how of what to do and how to do it. You need to be really smart and savvy and spend more time on your property investment. The last point on this slide is having the right insurance in place. Now, obviously, having the right buy-to-let in terms of buildings and contents insurance in place, which also links towards your tenant and what type of tenant they are as well in terms of their job or demographic, is really key. So make sure you have that in place as well. Also, there's insurances that can protect you from rent arrears and legal expenses as well. So these are insurances that are spreading in awareness, but you'd be surprised at the amount of landlords that don't take them out as well. So make sure you've got the right insurances in place to protect your investment further. Okay. We're going to have to speed up slightly through this one. So the last six set of tips would be, the first one, we treat your rental like a business. I think this is one that we probably mention quite a lot across our webinars. It's not a charity, it's a business. There's a reason why you've got into property investment, or you've gone into it accidentally, and it's still an asset that you want to realize value from, so you need to treat it like a business. And it's hard to put emotions aside when you have tenant issues, or if you haven't got the time and efforts, then you use an agent, but you really need to treat your rental like a business. The second point is utilize thorough tenant referencing. Don't try and do it yourself or get a basic understanding from them when you meet them. Obviously, go for it. Use deep checks. Look at bank statements, pay slips, speak to employers, ask the right questions to tenants and previous landlords or previous agents. Make sure you've got a good picture. Combine all of that with actually meeting the tenant face-to-face, if possible, if you are local to the property, and use that gut feeling combined with all the information you get, because there's no point rushing in to accept a tenant just because you've got a rental void or you're worried about a week or two's rent. All that time and effort to prevent an issue from potentially happening is worth it. And regards to rentals and demand, if your properties have a high quality in a good area, then there's going to be a lot of demand potentially for that property as well. So don't rush in to accepting the first ever tenant, and you might have question marks over them, because if there's any issues, then it could cost you a lot of money. The third point...
Can I just come in there?
Yeah.
Can I just come in there on the referencing side very quickly, because I know we're really sort of stuck for time. Because, you know, I've got a 10-point checklist, but one of the things that I would say to all landlords that are very, very important, when you're checking affordability, multiples do not work. And that's probably why 50% of landlords are in rent arrears. Landlords, letting agents need to go back to assessing affordability as mortgage companies will basically do. So you can't compare two people who are on a salary, for example, of $50,000, that they both have the same surplus income. And the only way that you could possibly get that information, if you've actually recorded that information in terms of on an application form. But I just think affordability in multiples, 20 times the rental, 30 times the rental, it does not work. And that is why a lot of landlords are basically in arrears. It's one of my strongest points, but as I said, we have 10, but we don't have the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot we can go into the referencing, but I think, again, we've covered off referencing and what we can do in terms of another webinar, but affordability is a key point in terms of the real earnings. Mortgages go into depth and look at true analysis and income and assets and what goes in and out. From a referencing point of view, it's an affordability ratio based on whatever is determined acceptable by the agent or the landlord, so it's something to look into as well. But to get a true understanding, you need a combination of lots of information to go through that. The third point, keep your tenants happy. Now, these are just little tips that we can suggest or offer. You know, have a phone call with them a monthly, or drop them a text saying thank you for the rent. On your inspection, obviously just mention what you're going to be doing or what you're having a look around for. Any little notes to keep in touch, because if there's ever an issue or ever a query, you want to have that open dialogue and that communication there. I'm not asking for anybody to be best friends with the tenants, because that'd be highly unlikely. But keep that dialogue open there, keep that communication up there. Drop a little text to see how everything's going. Make notes of the 6 months or the 12 monthly renewals. Drop a little gift off at every renewal time. Small things go a long way. And tenants are actually staying a lot longer now. From our stats over the last 250,000 references, let's say over the last 6 months, tenants are staying a lot longer now in properties, which is pushing close to 2 years for unfurnished properties and slightly longer for furnished. Is there any other tips that you guys do at George Ellis, Marie, in terms of keeping your tenants happy that I haven't mentioned?
So I think keeping tenants happy, it's a characteristic thing. And I think as a landlord, I always say that you have to have a bit of a seesaw effect. You've got to know when to be charming and when to be assertive. And I think also what landlords need to remember, that in the age of the Deregulation Act and any tenancy from the 1st of October 2015, you need to make sure that you document everything. I always feel that email is a good medium. You can always send a text, but send the email. Most people have actually got them on their phones. If you have to go into a court of law, you've got everything there. There's some courts that don't actually accept the text messages I've been aware of late. But it is about documenting and being quick on the repairs, at least quick to acknowledge. You know, you're subject to a third party, you're waiting for the tradesman to come. They may well be out on another job. Sometimes tenants do expect things to be done immediately. It doesn't work like that. But I think if one can give an acknowledgement, it definitely goes a long way.
Yeah, and definitely, Marie, very valid points. The next one is obviously document everything. Again, emails, don't take verbal agreements. So try and have everything documented in writing. The fifth point is use a call forwarding target number, just a random suggestion. This instead of using a personal number. There's plenty of websites and companies that you can use on the UK around the UK that are £5, £10, £15 a month, and you can have a target number where the calls are forwarded to you as well if you don't want to give your personal number out. And the last point on landlord tips is inventories. They may cost, but they're very essential for pre- and post-tenancies, any deposit resolutions or wear and tear or damages. Obviously, the inventories are key as well. So it's a small cost, additional cost, but again, essential. Okay,
fine. Oh, I would agree with that.
Yep.
You've got another final point? Can I just say something on the inventory?
Yeah.
Landlords, just try to use professional terms. So when you look at a window above a door, don't describe it as a window, a glass panel above the door. It's called a fan light. And just remember that when you're describing everything, you know, describe it in terms of what's the colour, what's the shape, what's the type of material. Is it marble? Is it wood? Is it glass? You know, it's that sort of thing, so that you can get a good written description, but also back it up with photographic evidence as well, is what I would add.
Definitely. Okay, thank you. So last slide, stats and forecasts. We'll just fly through this one because we are just out of time, but I'll try and answer a question or so as well. So 1 in 4 properties are predicted to be rented by 2021, depending on where you read and where you see this. I think all these predictions in terms of 25% of households are going to be in rented accommodation within the next 5 to 10 years is the forecast. I think everything's moving towards there. We're over 1 in 5 now, so we're more closer to 1 in 4 than 1 in 5. So the private rented sector has doubled over the last 10 years as well, so that means more people are renting. Our culture shift is changing towards renting as well, being more acceptable of this. Again, that's a massive culture shift from generations prior. We're moving towards a potential, you know, European model where in Holland, Germany, France, even though the laws are slightly different, renting is the norm there as well. So lots of changes coming. That means more tenants, more landlords, more properties. The third point there, home ownership is at its lowest in 30 years. Again, it just solidifies and validates the point I've just mentioned. And this stat came from Arla. 59% of letting agents expect rent increases this year. And that's obviously due to all the legislation and the tax changes we've mentioned. There's letting agents obviously are working on behalf of their clients, the landlords, and they need to obviously look at offsetting or other ways to gain these costs back in. Tenants are staying in rental properties for longer. I actually jumped ahead and mentioned that one earlier. And again, I think that could be more down to security, stabilisation, and linked to the average age of the renter as well. So if I look at our reference and pool in terms of statistics, the average age of renter is creeping up slightly year on year. So the average age of renter across the UK, now bear in mind demographics, it could change, but this is just an overall pool, is just over 38, actually closer. 38.4, I think the average age of the renter was as well. So these are some stats and forecasts. It's obviously not all the doom and gloom. Property is still a great investment. It's just you need to be wiser, you need to be more savvier, and you need to think more about the tenants as well and having great relationships with the tenants, having the best suitable properties on the marketplace and charging the best and most competitive rental rates as well. So lots to consider. We have run out of time, but I'm going to try and answer two questions. I'm getting waved at for 5 minutes, but we'll try and answer two questions. So, let's pick one. My one buy-to-let property is an F rating and tenants are already in. What do I do? I think we've covered this one off, but EPC, all EPCs will have a recommendation in order of how to enhance it in terms of the report that you get. And every rental property now should have, obviously, an EPC, and you should have one at hand if your agent hasn't already got one for you. You need to action this as soon as possible and obviously upgrade that rating from an F to a minimum of an E just to be sufficient. And that's obviously, that's coming in from April as well, so you've got, you know, a very short time scale in order to do that. But liaise with the tenants, try and get the full cooperation in terms of what you're trying to achieve and do, and I think you should be okay. One last question, it's short and sweet. I'm going to pass this one to you, Marie. I'm a landlord, have been for a couple of years. This legislation scares me. Should I use a letting agent?
Should you use a letting agent? I think it's got to be an individual decision. If you're using a letting agent, you really do need to question lots of things about them in terms of, you know, who are they, how transparent are they, do they do the referencing, do they pass it on to a third party, you know, what's their method of operations, you know, in terms of their procedure with repairs, their management style, have they got client money protection? I mean, there's loads of stuff. If you're doing it yourself or considering doing it yourself, then you know that for many years now, I've been an advocate of landlords who want to do it themselves. But I do feel now, more than ever, you really do need to be very, very clued on legislation, and you need to have somebody in your corner that is very, very good on administration. Because it's the smaller detail, and I can go over detail for another sort of 45 minutes, but I'm going to just give one example. Let's say if you take a deposit from somebody and you don't capture the information of who the relevant person is, i.e. another person who may have paid some money towards the deposit, you could be fined for not giving that person the information. Now, if you don't know a basic such as that, and I'm sorry, let me correct that, it's not a basic, because it's a minor point, but it can cost you. So my point that I'm trying to make is that landlords need to be on point, and they need to have a rudimentary idea of the legislation that is before them. As I've always said, what is a business? A business is solving a problem for a profit. I think there's lots of pluses that are going to happen in the buy-to-let. I think landlords shouldn't have knee-jerk reactions and just should be looking about how things are going on their bottom line. Keep them with good managing agents. If they're not such good management agents, then, you know, you need to make a choice on that. But it's one of those decisions that have to be made by that individual, and there's lots of other pointers, and perhaps we can put something together soon, because I know that time has run over.
No, definitely, and I echo them as well, so real valid points, but I think it does come down to personal circumstances and situations as well, but you're right, there is so much to talk about on that point, but personal preference. Okay, so I'd like to thank everybody that joined us for the call. A copy will be obviously sent to you as well. We'll get a mini handout and sent out also as well, just to cover off a few of the key points and enhance what we've already discussed. I'd like to thank Marie as well for your time. So that's been greatly appreciated, and I hope the audience obviously enjoyed that as well. Any marketing feedback, the email will come today and there'll be another one tomorrow. So reply back to that with any thoughts or topics for future conversations, and this will be available to download via podcast and on our resources center. So once again, thank you for your time today, and enjoy the rest of your month and week.